The challenge is to use AI if you're going to use it and still project your own personality.
Of course, that's a challenge. Yeah, it has to be you. Welcome to Reimagining You, the podcast where we explore the power of personal branding, transformation, and leadership in today's hybrid economy. Dr. Waleed Fayyad is a distinguished engineer, transformation strategist, and former Minister of Energy and Water in Lebanon. His brand, which we're going to talk about today, is a unique fusion of technical genius and human connection.
Listen, I think the key is to always transform and utilize what you have and turn it into a success. Because many people said that, what are you doing accepting to become a minister in this environment and there's corruption going on and nobody's going to appreciate? And I think I proved those people to be wrong. Always be aware that you are not perfect. However, it is inside you and in your ability and in your hands to make sure that the positive traits that you have that make you unique and make you valuable to your environment and to the society at large and even to the people you love can by far outweigh your negative trait. And it is in your hands to shine a light on those positive traits and make sure that this is what the society and the people at large and your friends know you for.
And always stay authentic and true to yourself, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Welcome to Reimagining You, the podcast where we explore the power of personal branding, transformation, and leadership in today's hybrid economy. I'm Dr. Eli Daher, and I'm pleased to be your host for today. Today's guest is someone very special, and I'm truly honored to have the privilege of chatting with him candidly. He's someone who has redefined what it means to lead intellectually, strategically, and yes, sometimes unexpectedly. Dr. Waleed Fayyad is a distinguished engineer, transformation strategist, and former Minister of Energy and Water in Lebanon. I looked at his resume, and frankly, it's scary. His resume reads like a global power list. PhD from MIT, senior roles at McKinsey, Booz Allen Hamilton, and partners in performance, and leadership across billion-dollar public reforms in energy, water, and infrastructure throughout the MENA region. And here's something truly remarkable that I did not know. Waleed is the only person to have ever graduated simultaneously from France's top most elite engineering schools, École Polytechnique and École Centrale de Paris. In a system known for its rigor and exclusivity, he earned both degrees at the same time in June 1995, a feat no one else has matched. That dual achievement marked a defining chapter in his journey and reflects the kind of discipline and brilliance that has shaped his entire career. But what makes Waleed stand out isn't just the credentials, it's his humility, authenticity, and spark. So he danced on beaches, posed for photo shoots in traffic medians, and still led systematic reforms with courage and clarity. His brand, which we're going to talk about today, is a unique fusion of technical genius and human connection. Welcome, Dr. Fayyad.
Thank you so much for this introduction, Dr. Ali. I'm really humbled by it, and thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. It's really an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. And I want to start with a confession. And a confession is that I did not know you before this podcast, really. I mean, I don't follow the news in Lebanon. All I know is that you took the public sector in terms of the Minister of Water and Energy, Water and Power. But then I see your picture or your brand that is visible to me and to maybe many of us as that person who's spontaneous, who's humble, and who's really authentic. Yet when I did my research, I found those whole, you know, 3 pages long pedigree along with all these power companies that you worked with. So my question to you is, why do you only project that image? Or is this intentional or unintentional?
No. I think, thank you for the questions. None of this is artificial, if I may. I would like to project to the outside world and to the people who I am truly. You know, that's my objective. My objective is for people to know me for who I am exactly, not more and not less. And if the question is also about why I did what I did, in general, I've always thought, it's important in whatever you do the best you can and to not capitulate after what happens, and that even if you at times feel that you have failed or that you are not succeeding, that you should continue and persevere, and that the putting the energy and the commitment is needed, and the hours, and the effort will ultimately prevail over any hurdles. And I've genuinely followed this instinct and these principles in life.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing. So I'm going to bring you back to the mission. First step in the book is really define the mission for any executive or entrepreneur or consultant that listening to us or watching us. In that book, we have the 10-step process, but the first and foremost crucial step is defining your mission. I'm going to take you back to the 1990s when you were studying and you were doing all these engineering degrees and PhDs and whatever. What was your mission then?
All right, so my mission, quite simply, back then, was to learn. It was essentially to, as I was saying, be the best I could from a knowledge and scientific acumen perspective. I've always, in the family, we've always nurtured the importance of science as an engine to reform the world and life in general. And to not only that, but to understand it, to understand the world and to change it. Science is key to achieving that. And it's with that spirit that we attacked, my brother and I, the education life and the academic life after that. And it's always been a pursuit of the best education systems that we could associate ourselves with. That was our guiding compass, if you want, during that phase.
Mm-hmm. So you were thinking a bit at some stage to go in academia, becoming the professor, doctor?
No, not really. I've always thought that I wanted to achieve the highest levels of educational acumen, to have the option from a part-time perspective, perhaps, to give lectures at universities. But I've never thought of myself as an academic person who is going to spend his life in the context of a university settings, although I have enjoyed my life as a student in the university to the largest extent. So the accumulation of academic, if you want, degrees and experience was done in the spirit of being ready for what is next, no matter what that was, especially that at that time in my life, during this journey, there was not really a singular point where I could say this is a passion of mine for the next chapter of my life. Some people enjoy a certain field, and from the beginning, they know they want to participate actively in that field in their next chapter in life. I've not had that privileged myself. So that's why I felt that it was okay to continue in the journey of academic growth until I was ready for professional life.
I've done engineering as well. I've done it in the French system, in the Azib side. And I'm just trying to imagine Walid being in the Grandes Écoles and the Polytechnique, having that rigor, but yet you're so your personality projects fun, excitement, spontaneity. How did you survive those years of rigorous study? Did you enjoy them?
Well, I look back at them with a lot of affection to those days. They were shaping in the sense of shaping my personality. They were not easy. I was coming from a place in high school where the population of students was smaller and where the competition was less fierce and less aggressive. So I relatively easily was able to be in the front of the performing stack, and I enjoyed that positioning. I enjoyed it because, as I said, it's not from a competitive standpoint. It's more from the standpoint of someone who always wants to be the best at anything they are doing. to give the best you can. So when I did the transition to the preparatory schools, lycée préparatoire in France, it was a complicated one, both for me and for my brother, because it was relatively easier when we were in Lebanon. Despite the civil war and everything that was going on, we were performing quite nicely and in the first ranks in school and high school, always in the classroom at the level of the whole school. But then when you go to the French preparatory school, this is where all the students come in from all over France, but also from all over the Francophonic world, in order to study in those lycée préparatoires. They are quite competitive, and you have some of the biggest scientific brains or future brains of Europe. And it was not easy to perform in the beginning, so you had to go through a difficult adaptation phase. And it was, as I said, difficult and emotionally difficult, because you are in a country where you have no more too much friends and family, and you are in a foreign place, and still you have to overcome the challenge of not being too good in the beginning. But once you get accustomed to it, and again, what I said earlier is, if you put in the effort needed and you commit the hours and you commit to performing better, eventually this is what happened, and it came along. Once we understood the system, we were able to compete a lot better and to in fact achieve, to advance quite steadily from there. So this was the transition into a place where competition was more aggressive, and this is partly what shaped my personality also, in the sense that it's always, you have to always understand that you're not going to be the best in any setting just readily from the get-go. And you have to be prepared for it, and you have to be prepared to work hard in order to excel later.
I hear a few messages here, a few traits: resilience, grit, perseverance, and acknowledgement that you're not going to be always the best. So acknowledge that, but work hard to achieve that, or have at least this is as an ambition. Truly well said, by the way. So this is great. I'm going to take you to your work life now. So you've danced around McKinsey, Booz, performance Partners in Performance, and all the top consulting groups. And then you shifted to the public sector. So you have quite a bit of exposure, whether it's a private customers, big problems, governments, public sector. Yet you are, at least for me and maybe our some of my audience and viewers, you are Waleed Fayyad. You're not the senior partner of McKinsey or your managing partner of PIP. And by the way, do you know what PIP is? When I asked you this question over the phone, you told me, yes, I work for PIP, which is Performance Partners in Performance. And I told you PIP for me is previously important person. And that's what I use always in my podcast, because for the audience and viewers, a lot of the people are actually sitting in a comfort trap. And their comfort trap is a business card with a name and a title, president of so-and-so, VP of so-and-so, with a nice company name. So when they go open doors and ask for a meeting or discussion or negotiation, they'll say, I'm Mr. John Doe, president of this company. So they give them a meeting. However, that's where the comfort trap is. They have with all this, they come with salary, perks, travel and everything. But as soon as they leave, they become pretty much a PIP, a previously important person that actually they don't even have the front seat in a conference. They're not very well known anymore, so they don't open doors. And this is where the danger of being trapped and not building a personal brand early on of things that you know and you have value to give. For you, you have defined the value that you give. You have identified early on what you could contribute, and I will ask you what's your next mission. And then you claim that land and you became Waleed Fayyad. So kudos to you. That's my observation. Now, taking you through this, and you finished your public sector, what's your next mission? Can you share with us?
Now, I know it's for the anecdote. Now it looks like I am a PIP and a PEP at the same time.
Okay, what's a PEP?
Pep is a politically exposed personality. It's a personality, when you are doing that, you start being chased by the banks, and they start talking about you being exposed. You have to be careful. It's always complicated life, being a Pep also. So Pip and a Pep is a double complication. Listen, I think the key is to always transform and utilize what you have and turn it into a success. For example, I want to go back to education and give you something. You know, in general, when you are in the École Préparatoire, you go, you do a competition to make it to the Grande École. Yeah. In my case, when I did the competition to go to the Grande École, I earned the École Centrale de Paris, which is the number two school, not the number one school. I didn't earn from the first year the École Polytechnique. So what I did is that I went into École Centrale de Paris, and then at the end of the first year of École Centrale de Paris, I took again the exam for École Polytechnique, and I actually was admitted to École Polytechnique, and this is where I decided to do École Polytechnique while not giving up Centrale Paris, which in a sense transformed a failure between quotes, because I did not get the first school from the beginning. I got the second school, which is a reputable school. It's, for example, École Centrale de Paris is a school that graduated the Gustave Eiffel, the person who built the Eiffel Tower. So it's a great engineering school, in fact, but it is different than École Polytechnique. One is more oriented towards making things, and one is more oriented towards understanding why things are. So I transformed that quasi, if you want, setback into a differentiation by doing the two schools at the same time. And I assume, I know, in fact, that no other person has ever done that. So turning whatever you are left with and whatever you do into looking at the positive side of it and turning it around to make it a success is key. There's nothing negative in absolute in general. There's always an angle. There's always a silver lining that one needs to look for. And now you ask me about the future. I look at the future very positively, is that I have all this acumen, and no matter what, we're going to try to use it and make the best part shine one more time. What's next for me? I enjoyed quite a lot my experience in the public domain for the simple reason that I felt that my work and my effort had a much broader and much better felt and more felt broadly felt impact by more people than ever, and especially my own citizens in Lebanon. So I felt that was so gratifying, and I enjoyed that feeling a lot. So that part of my mission as in the public sector was truly gratifying, and in that sense I always leave a room for going back to it when the time and the opportunity arises and the duty calls. At the same time, during this period, this new chapter, I'm looking at options to make an impact again, while enjoying life, in making use of the major trends shaping our world today. One of those trends is, as you know, artificial intelligence. This is not like, this is almost like plain vanilla now, but it is a reality that artificial intelligence, according to some of the biggest people involved in the domain, is today shaping our business world and the economy and even the public sector and social life in a more drastic way than internet was shaping our lives and shaped our lives, in fact, in the 90s. I remember when I started at school, we barely had email. We didn't have email. So when I started university, and this is where we all those platforms came with the internet, email, and the whole internet revolution. Today, AI allows you to improve efficiency in everything you do, especially for businesses, whether small and medium corporations or large mega corporations. They have to embrace it in order not to be overshadowed by competition. And it's actually an existential threat if they don't adopt.
But not only efficiency, it'll be efficiency, productivity.
Efficiency is in the broader sense, meaning increasing work productivity, increasing the speed of doing things, increasing the speed at which you achieve goals. Things that used to take few days now take only a few minutes or hours, and things that used to take a year of research can take now only a few days with the right research.
Also more
and allowing then the efficient decision making, and sometimes automated decision making. So in that sense, I'm pursuing with a few partners the development of a company specialized in making use of AI for improving business efficiency for the use of companies regionally, but also globally, with a dual concept. One is the productizing solutions in key business areas, but another one, perhaps even more important for Lebanon, is to build a what I'm calling an AI factory, which is a group of corporate employees that are trained in the AI context, computer science and computer engineering degrees, and that contribute for corporate customers to implementing their AI, their own AI solutions. So in that sense, we can build a reservoir of capabilities in Lebanon and retain this Lebanese talent and export what they have to offer to the world without having to export these actual people, and instead have them be housed here in Lebanon and nurtured here in Lebanon and growing with their families in Lebanon. So that's a mission that I believe is worthwhile pursuing, because it helps me and my fellow citizens at the same time. And separately, coming from my consulting background, I'm pursuing also with my partners the opportunity of private equity investment and engagement in turning around companies that are in distress, especially with a focus on European companies and some of the European companies active in other continents like Africa, emerging and growing continents.
I love it. I mean, you've got a noble mission. You've got also giving back the value to companies, and where you can improve them, you can reconstruct them, transform them, and also leaving the door open to your public sector so you can help reconstruct Lebanon. Even though during MIT, when you wrote your mission statement, as you shared, I want to participate in the construction of Lebanon, right?
Yeah, back then we were just getting out of the Lebanese civil war. This is where I went to school in France, and from there I had to write an essay to go to the U.S. So when I contemplated why I wanted to go and do my PhD, it was back then in civil engineering. The reality was that I always felt I needed to go back to Lebanon to participate in the social and economic life there, rather than just stay as a number in a foreign land, although I enjoyed my time there.
Very good. I'm going to bring back the question on your brand, right? And by the way, you have not accepted my connection request on LinkedIn.
Okay, I should do that without further ado.
So you're not really active on LinkedIn. I'm not sure why, because let me share my take on that. So if, again, I look at Waleed Fayyad, I see that humble person, spontaneous and whatever, but I don't see that knowledge that is parted, that is shared, you know, whether any wisdom that you share, any knowledge that you want to contribute to. Normally people take the channel of LinkedIn and they do posting. They do posting of things. And that's what we say when in chapter 3 in my book is, how do you actually put visible your knowledge, or you claim your niche, right? And everybody has a value, and it typically is buried in companies, right? The companies use and abuse kind of thing, your value, what you contribute, your knowledge, and then you don't make use of it as much, right? So part of building your brand is to put your knowledge and your niche. This is what I can do best. This is where I want to be labeled, out in the open. And they use channels like LinkedIn, like Substack, like conferences and whatever. For you, we don't see any of that. Or I don't see, maybe there is. But when I did my little research, I didn't see your presence in the knowledge area. Why is that?
Well, okay, for a few reasons. First, when I was in the corporate world, my knowledge, and maybe through searches you will find it, was being published by the company. So I did a lot of thought pieces in renewable energy, in the energy space in general, in digital oil fields, etc., when I was at Booz & Co. and when I was at Booz Allen. And we were publishing, I would be the author, and we would be publishing using the marketing and the branding of the corporations.
Okay.
So it's a little, joins a little bit what you were saying earlier, but nonetheless, my footprint was present and visible there. Now, when I transitioned into the public sector, the question was, okay, so how much communication you need to do? And what I deliberately chose, or deliberately and also because I'm resource constrained, is not to be overly active from a communication standpoint, in the sense that I wanted to focus my communication on the achievements rather than communication. In Lebanon, there's a big populist trend where public people, political persons, they speak in overly populist manner without supporting their speeches with a factual base and the deep research that is warranted at times. So I wanted to break away with this trend and show a different model of performing in public life. And that's why I stepped away from excessive communication. And what happened is the media took interest in what I was doing, and they were closer to me. And what I tried to balance is to be able not to alienate them, and at the same time not to be overly stretched and be communicating everywhere. So I tried to strike that balance, and the media actually took care of the communication for me, in a sense. I tried to manage all the media channels in order to make sure they are at least objective in what they are portraying, because many of the media channels are very politicized. So they will have a preset agenda before they talk to you in terms of what they were going to publish. So I tried to work hard on coaching and investing time with the different media counterparts in order to have them reflect the closest possible to objective assessments of what I was doing and what was being achieved. So to answer you, the communication was being handled through the media counterparts rather than by my own team. And in the end of my journey in the public sector, I did retain a media advisor, senior media advisor, and they were helping me publish on Twitter some of the positions that you can see available on my X account, and also there is a Facebook account. But I haven't been active on LinkedIn, because I in general feel that LinkedIn is more for the corporate. For the corporate world, it is a very good engine for increasing the footprint and your visibility. If you don't have, separately from that, a corporate brand and corporate resources behind it to publicize it and to make it visible, because it's more cost efficient to do it through LinkedIn. So I didn't have to go through that channel, and I'm assuming in the future, now that I'm back in the private sector, that I will have to leverage it more readily.
Okay. Fair enough. I think it's the right answer, so thank you for sharing that. I'm going to reflect on the unique value. So what land do you want to claim? What sandbox is really the place where Waleed wants to play? Let me give you an example. So when I tried to develop my personal brand, I asked a few people around, because I didn't want to reflect only that what I think about myself. I wanted to see the perception of people, colleagues, previous employees. What did you think of me? Give me three adjectives that you can describe. That one, you know, the first thing that comes to mind about Ali Daher, when there is an issue or there is a solution or an opportunity, what do you think of Ali Daher can contribute? And they told me, you can be, you're a strategist, you help people to unlearn and relearn, you're a great mentor, you know, these kind of adjectives. So I start claiming this as my niche, and this is how I started building my brand. Coming to you, if you ask five people that you entrust and they know you, what do you think two or three traits that you can claim as niche for you? And it's a difficult question because I didn't ask you this before, but what comes to mind? Do your partners that work with you, what do you think they think of you?
If you want three adjectives to characterize me in a way, I would say empathetic, intelligent, and objective-oriented achiever. I think that would summarize it nicely.
And if you want to help
sense,
companies.
In a sense, typically, in my mission, my first mission in the active life as a 20-year management consultant, I think it's fair to say that all the clients that set out to achieve an objective with my help have succeeded in achieving it. In my experience with about more than 100 corporations, there has not been once that the corporations were not satisfied with the work that I helped them do. So, and I think this is, I'm mentioning this now, but I think you can feel free to sound the market for it and let me know what you hear. So there is that. And when I set out to do a similar change in the public service context, with all the modesty that is warranted, I'd like to say that I modestly did contribute in the way that I set out to contribute, because I knew there were limitations to what can be accomplished. And it's not now the time, the right time, but I did set out those objectives up front, and for the most part, we were able to achieve them.
Very nice, very nice, and very well articulated. So you're going to be more active on LinkedIn going on forward now?
I have to learn, because I'm not naturally inclined to posting anything on social media. Social media is a double-edged sword. It's a double-edged sword. So if you post something on it, you have to be assume full responsibility for what you write there. I find myself when I write an email, which is not even published on social media, it's a one-to-one relationship between you and the people you are sending a message to, or even a WhatsApp message, I find myself correcting the grammar in the text after I wrote written it, and taking the time to make sure that all the punctuation is there, etc. So I give a lot of respect to what I write, and it also means that I am a bit, stingy in what I produce from a writing standpoint, because I give a lot of weight to quality.
Yeah, I remember when I told you we're preparing for this episode, you told me, please, no voice, write it down on a text, because yes. Typically on WhatsApp, people, you know, it's so easy to send voices. But I took that cue, because I think when you read it, you can reflect on it, you can absorb it.
It's there.
It's there.
For reference.
Exactly.
And you go back to it. And that's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
So you better be careful about what you write.
Very well. Very good advice, by the way.
Because it reflects your personality.
Yes.
It reflects
and
you what
can read
you stand
a lot.
For.
I mean, you can read a lot through the text. Obviously, now there is AI, right? So people just put in their comment. I typically sometimes have a voice into ChatGPT, and then it produces beautifully crafted email, right? But it's not my voice.
The challenge is to use AI if you're going to use it and still project your own personality.
Of course. That's the challenge.
That's a challenge.
Yeah, it has to be you, right? Back the human part of AI. We described what's your unique value. We talked about your mission. We talked about your digital arena and what you're going to be doing, hopefully in the future. Now I'm going to move to the fourth category, which is network. So typically, an executive, audience and viewers, they think that their network is through conferences. They go exchange business cards, you know, and they take that. And I'm not sure what they do with it, because, or send it a LinkedIn connection request like I did. But then you have these names, you have those contact lists, and I have 7,000 contacts on my contact list on my computer.
I have 12,000.
You have 12,000, but you know,
11,000.
Really, I think you're only 50 people that you know, or you can communicate with, and you can leverage, right? So the percentage of that connection is really low. So that's people, what they understand on the network. Another area, which is in the social arena. So you go in conferences and you give that. In social arenas, people come to you and they introduce themselves, right? Hello, I am Ali Daher. And you tell me, I'm Walid Fayyad. You say, first question I would ask you is, what do you do? Right? And I asked you that question. And, you know, one of the previous, Adrian Gostick, actually, my previous guest, I told him, this is what's happening in the social environment. And if I ask you what you do and you tell me something about what you do, and I'm not interested to gain something from you, like either, you know, I have an opportunity to sell you something or a job. Or
to buy.
yeah.
To sell or to buy.
Exactly. Or to buy. You know, I move on and I work the room. So what he says is that first thing you need to do with your network is to give them something. So the difference between a normal person and a networker is when I ask you, what do? My mind goes in and says, how can I help him succeed? Rather than how can I gain from him?
I understand.
Right? So talking about these two things, how do you manage your network? And I'm sure you have a lot on your network.
Let's talk about it. I like the question that you are asking. And I have to admit that for me, it's more simple in the sense that my whole life professionally was about thinking of what my clients need. So in that sense, in any social setting, that's the first thing I look at is when I am meeting somebody, is what is it possibly that they need? The client service mentality is what is essentially about that. So in that sense, yes, when I approach a social setting in a network, I understand implicitly from the beginning, intuitively, that on my mind, I need to think about what is it that they may be needing. And because life is a give and take. So once you know what they need and you have an angle to offering it to them, you need to know what is at stake for you in that sense, which is fine, which is fair. Yes, that's how I approach a network. I value a network a lot. And in fact, I have a problem today. In my contacts, when I'm adding new names, and your name has disappeared this morning. So I have a big problem technology. And that's why I think the good old cards are a very important thing, because they are they fight against and they are resilient against digital Alzheimer. So there is something with my cloud. Digital Alzheimer is happening in my cloud, and I just hope it's not me. I know it's not me because it's happened. I have proof. So yes, network is very important. I give a lot of importance to the relationships, but more so the quality of the relationships. Yes, it's true that 11,000 contacts that I have, I didn't keep in touch with them. But for the most part, if not more than half of them, there's been a personal touch that was involved in the rapport between us. And that's key to a successful relationship. To have a personal touch, to have something that they will remember you with. And if it's a certain trait of your personality, if it's a certain behavior, it's okay, as long as they can remember it and cherish it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I ask you for a network connection, personally.
Yes, in LinkedIn.
LinkedIn or now when we invite you for the podcast. Yes. What did you think I want from you?
I thought I said it to you. I said it to you bluntly. I think you have a mission, which is to help others bring out the best in themselves and under a personal brand perspective or personal brand building strategy. And in that sense, you are approaching people that have achieved some of that or where there is some experience to be learned from it. And the accumulation of those experiences allows you to be effective in helping others that are maybe younger or have not had a similar experience leverage the learnings that you have from others. So that's the basic, and it's normal that you will seek that. So it's part of your professional mission effectiveness.
Very good. Thank you. I couldn't articulate it better, but that's good. You read it correctly. Thank you.
And I'm happy to contribute because I'm also learning myself about the value of personal brand. In a sense, as I told you, it came spontaneously. I didn't think about it ahead of time, but it is true that I have always distinguished who I am and what I represent. And I've actually, when you think about it throughout my experience, I've had moments, important moments that shined a light on what that meant. When I was doing a McKinsey internship, I was a summer associate at McKinsey, and then I went on to become associate at McKinsey. But I had an interaction with somebody there, and they told me, you should not think that you can change McKinsey and McKinsey's expectation of behavior and positioning. You have to change to adapt to it. And that's an important eye-opening reality. You have to understand you are in the corporate world, what is expected of you, and if you are naturally fit for it or not.
Yes.
and make decisions accordingly.
Yeah, it's a big train, and the train is going. Either you're on board or, you know, you're going to suffer, right?
Yeah. So and that in that sense, there could be sometimes conflict between your own personal brand and the broader corporation's brand image, and this is something that you have to manage.
Very good. Now we're going to come to the closing questions, two of them. One is, if you can, share a lesson out of your experience. What have you learned about it, from it? And the second one is an advice to our viewers and audience around personal branding. Let's start with a lesson.
The lesson...
Take a lesson of a particular issue, problem, opportunity, failure, and what did you learn about it that you can share with our audience, which is important because learning, if you don't fail, you don't learn, right? That's typically what it is. If you just run on cloud and you never fail, I think you're bound to fall head first.
Well, I kind of gave you here, just now, I gave you a lesson that I learned, which is that when you are about to make a decision to partner with somebody or to enter into a corporation or to work in a certain environment, you have to understand well boundary conditions and what is expected and see if that is suitable for you in the long run or that will be carrying a heavy weight down the line. And the earlier you can think about that, the better informed your decision will be, because it could be a good decision for a short while and then you will find out that there's a clash and that it may not be the best. So you have to be always, before you make a big decision professionally or about your mission and about a certain work or even in a social setting, certain commitments on the long term, understand exactly what you are getting into. Yeah. And what's going to be expected of you. And in that sense, be sure that you are okay with that or not. And if not, then you have to look at alternatives. And if you are okay, then you have to assume the responsibility. So that's a lesson, I would say. In terms of the advice...
Advice, these corporate people or the entrepreneurs...
Advice.
For personal branding.
I think always be aware that you are a unique person. Always be aware that you have many bad qualities, that you are not perfect, and that, however, it is inside you and in your ability and in your hands to make sure that the positive traits that you have that make you unique and make you valuable to your environment and to the society at large, and even to the people you love, can by far outweigh your negative traits. And it is in your hands to shine a light on those positive traits and make sure that this is what the society and the people at large and your friends know you for.
Wow. Very powerful.
Yeah, I'm a staunch believer of this reality. We are all unique, and it's in our hands to make sure people know us for the good person we are.
And always stay authentic and true to yourself, right?
Absolutely. 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 That's a key, because otherwise life is too complicated.
Yes.
This way life is much easier. When you are authentic and genuine, life is so much easier.
Mm. Very powerful note to end that.
Yes, because many people said that, what are you doing accepting to become a minister in this environment and there's corruption going on and it's populist discourse, etc. And there's nobody's going to appreciate. And I think I proved those people to be wrong. In other words, I'm proud to say that many people have appreciated, the large majority, in fact, appreciated the new model that I offered very modestly, I want to say, to going about public life in Lebanon.
Wow. Very powerful note to end our episode. Dr. Waleed, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be sitting with you and listening with uninterrupted attention, your attention to us, sharing valuable points. I mean, there's a lot of learning if we unpack this episode, which we will do justice to this episode by posting some of the quotes you had, some of the wisdom you shared, and I'm sure our audience and viewers will listen or watch this with a lot of learning. So thank you so much. Thank you for being transparent, authentic, and being you in this podcast. And to our viewers and listeners, if you like this episode, please subscribe. There's every Thursday, there will be one episode coming in with insights from great guests such as Dr. Waleed. Thank you and goodbye.